Some women impersonate Sex and the City's Carrie Bradshaw with vast closets full of fantastic clothing. Even Sarah Jessica Parker pretends to be Carrie Bradshaw when she walks the red carpet. However, there is one woman in New York City who, if he knew her, would have been Darren Star's real muse. Let me introduce you to Susan S. Warner, the adorable petite blonde who at 59 lost her handsome, extraordinary husband to cancer 6 months after her wonderful 32-year-old son died by suicide. It's now 4 years later. After the most challenging days and nights, Susan decided to live her best life possible. And just like that, Susan was suddenly single. Carrie may have Susan beat on exposure, but Susan has Carrie beat on life's experiences. Listen in.
Love is lovelier the second time around. It sure sounded great when Frank Sinatra sang those wonderful words in the 1960s. For those who have been lucky enough to find a new partner after the death of a spouse, many admit it comes with complexities and complications. The romance may be wonderful, but reality rolls in. There's a lot to consider. How do you fold your new life into the old one? Susan S. Warner has lots to say on this subject. Susan, is a new permanent relationship for everyone?
Permanent. Let's start with that definition. I thought my marriage was permanent. So can I reclassify that, Lois, to long-term relationship? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that most people with the loss of a spouse or the loss or a divorce are looking for a long-term relationship again, particularly if they came off a good marriage. I think that they know what benefits it has. And I think most people in life look for security. So because we've discussed already in past podcasts that I don't necessarily think marriage is the answer, I do think that most people are looking for long-term relationships.
Pretty cool.
Particularly women. Yeah, particularly women. Men, I often find in conversations with men that they're looking to date around. But again, I think that men also, when it comes down to it, and are looking towards their future as they age, are also looking for long-term relationships where they have the security and the comfort of the same person and a continuity. So I do believe, shy of the 60-year-old that's dating the 30-year-old, I'm not sure they're looking for permanent relationships, but in the realm of people that are dating in their decade, I think that most people are looking for that kind of security and that kind of comfort in a long-term relationship.
Okay. The word continuity really, hit me hard when you just said it.
Mm-hmm.
What are the biggest,
mm-hmm.
then based on that, what are the biggest pitfalls?
What are the greatest advantages? Let's start out on the positive. How about that?
Cool.
Having someone to depend on, having a sounding board, having someone to love you, having someone to care about you, having someone to tell you you're beautiful, having someone to tell you you're smart, having someone to care. The biggest piece would be having someone to care about you. That is probably paramount. Someone who respects you, someone who sees your value on a day-to-day basis. It's great to see your own value, but it's also nice to have it reaffirmed. We're human. What are the greatest pitfalls? If you're independent, as I say I am, giving up a piece of your independence, compromising again. When you learn, and I have learned in this, that I do what I want, when I want, with whom I want, sometimes there are compromises. Compromises with their social life, with their careers, with their families, that you have to readjust. So you have to decide how important that is to you, those compromises, those changes. Would that be the greatest pitfall? That and blending families can be challenging. Having each other's children accept who you are and finding your place there, because you do have to find your place with adult children. They're not youngsters who want you as a parent, and you don't probably want them as a child. But having a cordial relationship is very nice. So I think the complexities of blending friendships, blending family, blending children are the biggest obstacles, not pitfalls, obstacles.
Having said that, you know, and you mentioned it, then what would you say are the greatest rewards?
Companionship, love, being cared about, consistency, having someone there for you, sounding board, encouragement, self-esteem, all of the things that you probably valued in your marriage, if you've lost a spouse that had a good relationship, or all of those things that you want back. Loneliness is a really horrible state of being. And I have experienced in my 5 years a depth of loneliness I didn't know was possible. And come out the other side being more self-reliant and better able to entertain myself and be my own best friend. But I'm human. And I'm social, I'm a social animal, and I want that person next to me again. I want that person to drive with me and talk to me out to the beach. I want that person to listen to my complaints and listen to my triumphs. It's really important. Being solitary for me, and I think for most people, is difficult.
Well, those were very powerful words and probably send these sound bites out to some people that, you know, I still can't make up their mind about their future life. That's amazing.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. How does your old life work with your new one?
That's a challenge. And you can quote me in saying before that the day you realize where everybody fits into this puzzle is a day of transformation. So understanding where and what new friends and old friends fit into this new relationship, understanding how your family accepts this person, understanding how to balance your children with your companion, is a juggling act. Interestingly enough, we were riding out to the beach last night in this dismal winter weather where it's still so beautiful. And all of my phone calls that I made, people said, say hi to Arthur, say, you know, be sure to say hello. And I realized that after a year and a half, everybody's getting comfortable. And I like that. But again, it's a juggling act, and you have to know what time you need with old friends alone, what time you need with your new friends alone, when the melding works, when it becomes more harmonious. It's a juggling act, and with practice and patience, it usually lays forward successfully. But you need to be sensitive to other people's needs as well as them being sensitive to your needs. You need to know when this is good and when it doesn't work and when you need alone time and when you can meld. And that comes with experience. And it comes with mistakes. You learn from your mistakes.
I'm glad you said that because I'm sure for most people, that's a silent transformation that not enough people really think about or discuss with others. So thank you for that information. How involved do you have to be with the family and friends of your new partner?
As involved as you want to be and as involved as they want you, you have to consider if they're opening up their arms to you and saying welcome or if they are holding back. And that's all natural and it comes with time and it comes with experience. As far as family goes, look, chances are when you've lost a spouse, you're not the only one mourning. Everybody around you and your family mourned as well. And they haven't necessarily come to the same conclusions you have about being with someone else. So you need to be sensitive to their needs, but they need to be sensitive to your needs. They're not there when you roll over at 2 o'clock in the morning spinning about a problem. Mm-hmm. They're not there when you're really low on a particular day and you need to talk to someone all the time. They're not there when you don't feel well, you know, when you wake up in the morning and there's someone to bring you coffee. So everybody has to understand what place this new relationship takes and that you're not trying to replace the lost person. You're trying to make a new life for yourself. And, you know, sometimes the companion tries too hard or you try too hard or I try too hard. And that never works well. Be yourself. Don't be any more or any less. Offer what you think is correct and don't offer any more than that. And it's better, you know, like with a new puppy, let them come to you instead of you push yourself on them. And it's usually it's more harmonious.
Also,
and it all comes with time. It all comes with experience. You know, it's why often people's first relationships don't work out. You know, that's a testing ground of how, what you should do and the mistakes you can make. And some of them are probably irreversible, but you learn from experience, just like you learn from your first relationships when you're an adolescent. Rarely does the first relationship become what is the rest of your life. It's a learning curve. And that is why you should always be grateful for the person of your first relationship who you both danced through this and learned and came out the other side and probably went into a new relationship after that. But it's all about learning, the learning curve. And as I said, letting things unfold naturally, letting people come to you. Don't force yourself on people. Don't let your companion force themselves on people. And just let it all play out naturally.
I feel like really being a busybody asking you this next question, but how do you arrange finances? Who pays for what? Is there a protocol in a new relationship, you know, being mature?
That's actually a really interesting question. And of course, the first answer to that is are both people on the same financial par? Is one much more financially secure than the other? And then, of course, on the cross side, is one more much less financially insecure on the other side? If going under the premise that you're both financially okay and relatively in the same ballpark, it kind of happens naturally and organically. In my demographic, in the men that I've dated, most of them want to pay the dinner check. It's just a natural formation of socialization. So men often are more comfortable with that and pick up the check. So as a woman, I find that I can, like, I always buy the tickets to the theater or to the movie. You know, you end up like zigging and zagging. When we travel, we pretty much split expenses. Mm-hmm. You know, I pay for my airline ticket, he pays for his. That kind of works out. But I have been fortunate that it's never a tit for tat, that it's just sort of organically works its way out. If you're cognizant of it and he's cognizant of it, you just sort of make it work. And you try to invoke a fairness that everybody's comfortable with. If there is a division in finance, I presume those people work that out as well, where if one person is so much more financially secure, they're more comfortable taking the lead on that. I've basically been in an even playing field, and we just sort of try to make it work. Mm-hmm. I've not had conflict over that. I've been very fortunate.
I feel like each of these questions should be their own podcast because there's so much more I want to ask, but we have to move
on.
Right,
but I only have my own experience, so I can't really give you – I have heard stories about people, and this has also come up before, where – you know, he owned the apartment and she lived in it and the kids say it's not fair. And no one knows how they work that out themselves. And you know, like, no one knows how that actually happens. I mean, if you have an apartment or you have a home or a second home, what are you going to do? Charge them rent? You know, it's right. Your home. You're paying those expenses anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of silly. So, but I know children oftentimes can get really funky in that, particularly if their parents really age out. And I think that, again, they need to look at the big picture of the companion and that person's been there for their parent and they've lived a joint life and you really shouldn't resent them in that regard. But money corrupts things, so that's another conversation to itself.
Absolutely. So here's another question that I think has so many parts to it, but we only have so much time. How do you deal with the ghosts of past relationships in a new relationship?
That could be its own podcast. Ghosts appear primarily when you lose your husband or wife, and they're there, and they're real. And I have had a lot of talk with my therapist about that, and I've come to the conclusion with her that, you know, you can forever be in love with your spouse, that love doesn't go away because they die. They're still very real in the presence of who you are and how you grew and what's happening in your life cycle, that you think of them being present in that, whether it's grandchildren or a marriage of your another child or something else that changes. I like to think that Michael is ever present. I was asked the funny question, you know, would he be happy that you're in a relationship? Michael would be happy that I'm happy. Is he happy I'm with another man? I'm not quite sure of that. Mm-hmm. As long as you can keep your ghost out of the bedroom, which is really important, mm-hmm. and that there's only two of you there, I think that there's often three people or four people in the relationship of widows and widowers. And if you are verbal and you use your words and you talk about them, it works. It works. Hmm. It's a delicate dance, and it's a balance, not to speak too much, not to harbor not enough. It was David's birthday last week, and I definitely was off. And then when I admitted why I was off and could speak about David that day, the day went well. It's a very accepting situation when you are with another person who understands what your triggers are sometimes. But if you communicate, the ghosts are real and they're okay. They make you a richer person. They make them richer. They make you understand each other better and deeper. So ghosts, as far as I'm concerned, exist. Keep them out of the bedroom. Not a good place for ghosts, but fundamentally it's okay. Okay.
Well, that's very, very important. I'm glad you shared that with us. How do you deal with jealousy? Or is there jealousy?
How do you deal with jealousy is important, because you have sometimes an idealized version of what is no longer. So you're dealing with ghost jealousy in one regard, and then you're dealing with a person who is out in the world as a single person, because if you did not marry, they have a life that is right. Not necessarily all yours. So, you know, jealousy can be charming and lovely until it's not. And that's a really big piece of someone's interpersonal relationship. And sometimes you need to face what the jealousy factor is and say, you're making more out of it than it is. It's not that. He's a friend of mine. He's an acquaintance of mine. He's a business associate of mine. Meet him, or vice versa. Meet her. Understand what we are and deal with it. Because jealousy in of itself, although can be charming on one level, can be toxic on another. So you have to really keep it in perspective and sometimes face those jealousy factors with the person and say, you see, you fantasized it to be greater than it is.
That's enlightening. And I must say, definitely another podcast, because I want more. I want more. I'm feeling, and of all the podcasts we've done, I'm feeling that emotion that I haven't really felt so much before. It's something good about this whole topic that's driving me crazy. Anyway, yeah. How do you stop comparing one relationship to the other?
I guess that's going under the auspices, you stop. Mm-hmm. The relationship that you lost is no longer here. I've always contended that I want different. I don't want what I had, because I loved what I had and thought it was near perfect. So in my case, it's find something different. And that so far has worked for me, with a few glitches, in that if someone wants what they had or wants something that you don't, you've got to work that out. Mm-hmm. So I think the best thing to do is not to compare, not to look for the same thing, and go for something different, unless you do look to replicate and that works for you. It doesn't work for me. I don't want to replicate what I had. It was unique. It was a unicorn as far as I'm concerned. I need to find something different. What the big issue I think in this is to get someone on board to want something that's different as well. So that's just interpersonal relationships and finding what's the best match for you. Because you both have to be on the same page, or ultimately it's not sustainable. I have said that I have learned in this process, and it's one of the great things that I've learned, is that what I want and need today is not definitely what I want and need in 2 years, 1 year, 5 years. So I believe that life should be fluid and flexible. And that's why that whole marriage thing of locking it down and getting the license and making it legal is not necessarily the answer. So I believe in fluidity and I believe in change. So if I say today, I don't want to be married, I want to be in this long-term relationship and I like the parameters we've set, I'm not saying to you, that's it forever. Lockdown, shutdown, closed. I'm saying, let's move through this together and see where it takes us. Let's see where this journey takes us in the end. Because I don't think anything is forever and locked down and complete. I've learned that. Life has dealt me those blows. So I carry that through on the positive too. So it's working for us. I'm really happy like this. If you're really happy like this, let's just go with it. Let's see where it takes us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the beauties of a second relationship. Because you're not having children, because you're not looking for something that needs to be literally done with a license, with societal norms, why not just play this out as good? You don't necessarily need to conform, I don't think.
Okay, what happens when you slip and call your new partner your spouse's name?
Everybody does it. It hasn't happened much. I have been called by someone's wife's name, and I completely understand. It's a laugh. It's a giggle. It's a looking them and saying, I get it. You called that name out for 35 years. You know, it happens. And just like everything else that happens, it's okay. It's okay. And as I said, most of the time, it's just a smile or a shrug, but mostly a smile. I get it. They get it. It's okay.
You realize that a lot of insecure people would think, oh, you're thinking about her and him all the time, and that's why it came out.
Not at all. I think that when you call someone's name out for 35 years, and you should almost be flattered because they're putting you in that same box, and that is flattering. That is warm and loving and caring. They're not doing it in the throes of an argument, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. It's either in everyday life or throes of passion or something that's serious and contentious, but never, it's not I'm having an argument with them and they call me by a different name. It's never in the negative.
Right.
So I think you just have to be understanding. It does not happen that often. People think it happens constantly. I have not had it happen to me or from me very often. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's anything one should worry about.
What are the new priorities that you have in your life?
I want to be respected. I want to be cared for. I want to love again. I want to be loved. And I've been very fortunate in relationships that I've been with very good men. And I think that you learn what's important, and it's not necessarily what was important 40 years ago, but core value wise, it has not changed. As important as it was for Michael to love me and be kind to me and respectful, and he was 100% on all those things, it's the same thing as important now. So those are the same priorities. Again, also add into that someone to care about my family, to fold into my old life as best they can, to respect my independence. That's really big and that's new. To respect my independence and respect my goals and my work and my needs, and at the same time, compromise sometimes in what you want to allow me to actualize and to allow you to actualize. Because I think at this point that should be really important to people our age, instead of fading away, to actually in this experience get to grow and self-actualize and be better and help each other with that. So that's really important.
Bravo to that. Bravo. Should you measure your love life for one over the other?
Love life, meaning, do you mean the whole package?
Right.
Well, that goes back to comparison. No. You know, I was with a friend's mother early in my dating experience who had a second chance and was with a man for 30 years after her husband died, and said that she didn't love one more than the other. And that kind of haunted me, and it stuck with me. And I think that the loves are different. They change. And in my case, for instance, I think I protect myself. about getting hurt the next time around. And some people do and some people don't. So I think there's a huge complication, but ultimately the answer would be comparison is not the answer. Look to this as something new, something different. You've changed as a person. I've changed as a person. So what I need has changed too. Again, not that I wouldn't take back what I had, but I can't have it.
Right.
So I need to put that aside.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. So, Susan, let's end it with, what does your new future look like?
I think my new future is happy and fulfilling and self-actualized, and hopefully will be with a person who loves me, who I love, who we can kind of march into the sunset together, the same future I hoped for the last time around, that we will grow old together and experience life together. The one thing that has changed is I'm trying to seize moments more, not put off today, tomorrow, what I could do today. Mm-hmm. Travel if I want to travel, come out to the beach if I want to come out here, do things I want to do now because I don't know what tomorrow brings. So, and that's made me really happy. So I think it's about the same thing that I've said continually to you, Lois, when you asked me this question. I want to be respected. I want to be the best version of me I can. I want to be remembered for good things, of being a good friend, a good mother, a good relationship, a good sister-in-law, a good sister, a good person. I want to help people. I want to be remembered for that, maybe through this. And I want to love and be loved.
Well, I thank you for all of your advice and your experience and your willingness to share. I think it's been very important. And we will meet again because so many of the topics we spoke about today leave me hanging for wanting more. So thank you.
I'm here for you.
Okay, thank you. And we'll chat again.
Bye-bye, Lois.